Good morning, everybody. I'll call the hearing of the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee to order for this March 2nd. Just a reminder that all of our hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. Our first, and we have a motion for the minutes of our last meeting, Representative Petersburg. This is the minutes for February 28th.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of our last meeting of February, February 28th.
Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Okay, so we have two pretty major bills on the agenda today. Our first bill is House File 2045, Representative Tabke. And after Representative Tabke introduces the bill to us, we have a number of testifiers, and we want to make sure we get through the list and give everybody ample time. So please keep your comments to about 2 minutes or less. And of course, we'll have the opportunity for members of the committee to both question the author and any witnesses. So House File 2045, we're going to move to lay this bill over, Representative Tabke, because we don't have a fiscal note yet, but I understand that we'll likely have it on Tuesday, and so members will actually move the bill out of committee formally on Tuesday, but we're going to have the hearing today. And so, Representative Tabke, I'll move that we lay over House File 2045, but I believe you have an author's amendment, A1 amendment. So
yes, Mr. Chair.
Let us consider that first.
Thank you. If we could just do that as an author's amendment, and we'll talk about the whole bill after
sure.
that, if that's all right.
Sure. Do you want to maybe just give us a, like, two sentences about the A1?
Yeah, the A1 takes and clarifies, after a lot of work with the community, with Representative Petersburg and other folks, clarifies and fixes some issues that were in the original draft of the bill, especially on the code of conduct and how things move forward.
Excellent. So, again, members, this is just getting the bill in the shape the author would like us to consider it. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. The A1 is incorporated. And so now we have House File 2045 as amended before us. Vice Chair Tabke.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate it. So today is an important day. We have been struggling in the Metro with transit safety for quite some time now, and this is legislative action moving forward. And before I get into things, I just want to say thank you, Mr. Chair, for all the support on this bill, as well as Lead Petersburg has been extremely influential in how we get how we've gotten to this bill today. So I appreciate his support, as well as Representative Elkins, who's been working on this, and all the transit advocates and writers who have contributed and put forward guidance on how we move forward with dealing with transit safety in the Twin Cities here. And so with that, what this bill is today is a three-month intensive intervention program to help reset what we have as the culture of being a transit rider in the Metro. So we all know, and we've seen stories, tragic story on from Monday, where a transgender woman was beat up at Lake Street Station, as well as just a history of consistent smoking, people who are on the train being belligerent, and crime on the trains. And so what we are doing today is we are putting together a program. It is a two-step program, and this is the first step of it to help with those issues. And so the first one is a coordinated effort. The first step is a coordinated effort, which is this bill today. It's a three-month effort for enhanced intervention programs using social services between the counties, Department of Human Services, and other folks to make sure that we get the people who need help the help that they need. And so the transit system is a magnet for the issues that we're handling in society right now. So the transit system is a place where people can have a warm, safe place to go if they are experiencing homelessness, if they are having mental health crises, if they're having addiction issues and those types of things. And so transit is a place for people to go for that. And so it's a larger, it puts a magnifying glass on the larger issues that we have in our society. And so this isn't just a transit issue. This is a societal issue that we need to continue to work on. And so what we're doing today is an intervention program. There's a three-month intervention program with a lot of folks working together in a coordinated manner in order to help the people who need help is the first part. And then the second part is to enforce what it is to be a transit rider and to make sure that we have a culture of safe and comfortable riding on our transit system. And so we have those expectations are met in this bill with a code of conduct and other folks, as it goes on. And the second part, just so that we get this out there, is we'll be coming in a future bill, which has been our ambassador program that we have been working on for years now. And so that will have a different name, and we'll move forward with it in a slightly different way. But that is the one-two step of what we're doing here with transit. And so a lot of folks ask me why a guy from Shakopee is working on transit. And so transit has always been an issue that I care deeply about. My community is oftentimes cut off from the metro. We have a bridge that doesn't meet the capacity and the needs that we have in our community, and I firmly believe that transit is an answer to meet those needs. And so giving options to my residents in order to get back and forth between across the Minnesota River. And so with that, while I was mayor, we worked really hard on transit issues and expanding the system. And as a legislature, my first term, we worked on transit safety at that point. It was a natural progression. And then this session, on the first day of session, there was a person who spun out. It was the day we got 15 inches of snow when we got sworn in, and person spun out in front of me and took out the front end of my truck. And so I've been a reluctant forced transit rider for the last 2 months, and I'm supposed to get my truck back today. We'll see if that actually happens or not. But I've had firsthand knowledge and witnessing what's going on the trains on a day-to-day basis. And we have a massive, massive problem that we need to take action, and we're taking legislative action today. And I hope for everyone's support as we do that. So today we have testifiers who will not only share and frame the problem as to where we're at today, but also making sure that we understand where we are going forward and to maintain those gains and making sure that we are minimizing risk for people of color on the trains as we are working with enforcement and things like that and making sure that we are working together on those solutions. So, Mr. Chair, I have a variety of testifiers when you're ready.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tapke. So what we'll do, members, is go right to the testimony, and then we'll have questions and discussion after that. The first testifier on the list is Aiden Kilgannon and Eva Johnson. And I hope I pronounced the names correctly, but you can always correct me. Welcome both of you to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And just as a note, following that, we're going to have Chair Zelli from the Met Council and Mitch Killian from the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you.
I am Aiden Kilgannon, and I'm 28 years old.
And my name is Eva Johnson. I'm Aiden's mom, and I'm not going to tell you how old I am. So I'm going to ask Aiden some questions so that he can tell his story. Aiden, when did you start riding on the regular route transportation system?
So I started riding the bus in 2014.
Where did you work at that time?
Water Park of America.
And where do you work now?
Neighborhood Cafe.
And how do you get to work at the Neighborhood Cafe?
I would take the red line to the MOA Transit.
And where do you go after you get to the MOA Transit?
I'll go on the light rail.
And after the light rail?
46th stop, and then I get on the A-line bus.
And Aiden's been working at the Neighborhood Cafe since the Water Park of America closed and Great Wolf Lodge took over, so about 5 or 6 years. He's been working and taking regular route public transportation for all of those years. Aiden, can you please share your story? What happened on the blue line on February 3rd, 2023?
So this woman decided to use her shoe, fling my hat off. She was in a towel, nothing underneath. And she took my bag, and then she used a shoe, whacked me on the side of my head, and spit in my face twice.
So this person is being charged with assault and robbery. However, the big issue here is that my son needs transportation to get to work. Public transportation has been regular route. Public transportation has been the option, the best option. Safety has now tilted into a concern that I can no longer allow for my young adult, amazing son with Down syndrome to ride on regular route public transportation. It is not safe. Something needs to change. Aiden, do you feel safe on the blue line?
At this point, no. If she's on there, no.
Okay, and what do you need for the blue line?
I need it to be safe.
And?
The blue line needs to be safer.
And that's all we have. Thank you for hearing us.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm sorry for your experience, and we hope this bill will improve the safety.
Thank you
again for coming.
Thank you.
Next up, we have the two of our partners in transportation coming together, I believe. Chair Zelli, the chair of the Met Council, and also Mitch Killian will be joining him. Mitch is the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Metropolitan Airports Commission. Chair Zelli, it's always good to see you. Thank you for coming this morning, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, and then we'll go to Mr. Killian, and I do believe that there may be a question or two for you from the committee. So,
good morning, Mr. Chair. I am Charlie Zelli, Chair of the Metropolitan Council, and it's my honor to present our thoughts on behalf of Governor Walz and the Metropolitan Council, and I'm pleased to be joined by Mitch Killian, representing the Metropolitan Airports Commission. So we, in fact, kind of represent the administration. I'm really thrilled and really very much in support of this innovative approach toward addressing a really critical need. And I think we just heard from the testimony earlier. This is many people's experiences, and it's time we have to do as much as we can to improve public safety on transit. I have to say, from my beginning tenure as chair of the Metropolitan Council, safety and the customer experience has been the number one priority. This really began probably prior to the pandemic, but clearly during the COVID epidemic and ridership declines, it has gotten worse, much worse, in an unacceptable level. This has certainly been my experience in over 30 years of managing public transportation passenger systems. I can tell you the experience of customers is always number one. If we are going to build the system as we expand it and we build ridership and the need, it's not just for essential workers, it's for everyone in our future to not have the dependency on cars and provide access to jobs, just as like what we just heard. We have made major steps over the past 3 years, and just to outline some of them, we have been increasing our resources toward an official law enforcement presence. We have also initiated the idea of a much more expanded customer service officers. These are non-uniformed, non-sworn-in officers, but they're uniformed, but they're there as guides and monitors of behavior. The challenge is there's just not enough of them. We have instituted real-time cameras. Real-time cameras, not just on the platforms, but on every train car. They come together in a central information center so that they're monitored in every step of the way. And maybe some evidence that they actually work is the terrible incident 2 days ago where we apprehended two perpetrators. Everything was on video. We knew where they were. We knew that they would get out three stations away, and that's when we apprehended them. But it was after the incidents occurred, so it is by itself not a solution. We have expanded and we're renovating a lot of our stations, and this is something that's really important, to kind of have the design be more defensive, more open, less places for people to hide. There is a state of art of how you think about security and how we create our built environments. We are taking steps to contract with private security. Again, a workforce challenge with some of those companies, but we know that we are looking for any kind of innovative way to address safety, and some of those private security contracts, notably the Franklin Station, and now we're expanding into Lake Street, we know makes a difference because it's a human presence at all times. Our homeless action team, which is part of the Metropolitan Transit Police, have had a really effective time using some of Met Council's resources, like our housing authority, be able to place people into permanent housing. We've been able to place as many as nearly 400 people into permanent housing. It's not enough. We have, again, a homeless action team, which is not fully filled in the positions we currently have available. I know, and we know, every one of those steps are just steps along the way. We could talk about our 40-point plan. It's not enough. We know that we have to think innovatively. We know that one of the biggest challenges we have is our workforce. We're probably 60 officers below our target. We have budgeted 171 officers. We currently have 107 that are in active full-time employment. But having said all that, we know that we can't police our way to safety. We need much more than that. Think that a significant presence of law enforcement is helpful. We're working with other jurisdictions, and of course we work very closely with Minneapolis-St. Paul. We're working with the city of Bloomington, with their police, and of course on a daily basis, many of the incidences, the patrols, the one silver lining of the pandemic is there's probably a heightened level of collaboration among various law enforcement agencies. We really applaud a holistic approach. This is really looking at the entire system. We have an immediate issues, and then we have the long-term career pipeline issues as an example. So we like the approach of doing something quickly to change, move the dial from what's an acceptable behaviors in our transit system, particularly light rail, but to be thoughtful about some of the longer-term challenges as we build our workforce. So we appreciate the opportunity to speak here, answer questions, partner with many of those that have been highlighted by Representative Tabsky's legislation, and one entity we work really closely with is the Airports Commission. So I'll leave that up to Mitch to describe.
Thank you for your testimony, Chair Zelli. We'll proceed with Mr. Killian, and then we'll have member questions. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chairman. Try that again. Chairman Hornstein, members of the committee, Mitch Killian, Metropolitan Airports Commission, Vice President of Governmental Affairs. Thanks for letting me say a few words of support for the bill today. One thing is the testimony that you heard today, we are regularly hearing those stories at the airport from our employees and passengers that ride the light rail continuously. I mean, over the last 6 months, I've been in numerous meetings with flight attendants, unions, chief pilots associations, concessionaires, talking about the exact story that you heard here today of their employees. And so I'll spare you lots of those, but I want to make sure you understand the use at the airport of light rail. Some of you may not use it as much and things you might not be familiar about how important it is to us. But first of all, it is the connection between our two terminal buildings. And that's for passengers, such as a passenger that flies in on Iceland Air or Aer Lingus from Dublin. A lot of those passengers that are coming in, more than 50%, are connecting onto other flights. They're not coming here to go to just Minneapolis. So they're connecting and they're having to go over from T1 or T2 and back and forth twice on each end of the flight. So we have international passengers coming in and getting on it, and we're hearing complaints from them about the safety on the light rail. Then a lot of our workforce in Terminal 1 have to park over at Terminal 2. So on a daily basis at 4 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the morning and 11 o'clock at night, we have custodial staff, we have waitresses and waiters, we have all the staff that are parking over, the airline contract employees that are parking over in T2, and they have to ride light rail, and we are hearing complaints continuously from them about the safety of light rail. And the increase since 2018 is enormous on the number of complaints and safety issues we're hearing. So besides connecting our two terminals, I just want to give you some other thoughts about the importance for the airport. One is a lot of our workforce comes from South Minneapolis and even Highland Park in St. Paul. And the whole idea of that Hiawatha corridor was really to be able to bring that workforce and move it around, not just to the downtown area, but a lot of the workforce is coming from those areas. And we are continuously hearing complaints about getting on at the different platforms in South Minneapolis or busing over from Highland Park and connecting and what's going on at those points. And so everybody's got workforce challenges. This is really increasing the airport's problems because people don't want to ride it right now, and we're continuously hearing that. And then as far as tourism goes, on both ends, you have the Minneapolis Convention Center. We oftentimes have a convention that rolls into town with 2,000 to 4,000 people. And if you sit by our information booths at the airport, those people that are coming to conventions walk straight to our information booths and say, how can I ride rail? It's surprising. They don't just go for Uber every time. They don't go for taxis. A lot of them come in with the expectation that they can get on light rail, and we are hearing complaints from them. They might ride it one way, but they don't ride it back because they're afraid. And things on it. Then going the other way to the Mall of America and in Bloomington, the Bloomington Convention and Visitors Bureau has teamed with us over the years to have international passengers that can lay over at Minneapolis without an increased cost of their ticket to be able to go to the Mall of America. It's been a really great success story, especially when we have our Asia flights. And the Asian community loves to stop over here before they go on. And so we have that Narita flight that connects to Tokyo coming in. People stay over, but they don't want to ride light rail now and things. It's clear to us. We continue to hear it. And so it's affecting our tourism industry as well as our workforce and others at the airport right now with this safety issue. A few things that happened to us just so you have a feel for it. We have bathrooms and things out at those light rail platforms are in the parking ramps for the passengers that are coming and going. We're having to lock them at night because people are getting off of light rail and they're using them as shelters regularly. Our flight display monitors out there, I get wrecked regularly because people are jumping off a light rail. The open drug use is just incredible. I mean, even with cameras on them, the open, and it's not marijuana use, it's crack and things like that. Open pipe smoking right in the open next to our passengers is a very regular occurrence for us. So I just think that we wanted to make sure and get this on the table because we are hearing it. I've been in meetings lately with those unions and different people to talk to them about what we can all do together. We've been beefing up, working with Bloomington and Metro Transit Police. Metro Transit Police is in our calls with us. There's one particular officer I want to note, Captain Raymond, and just solid, upstanding guy on all these issues to try to do the safest thing they can. Our police chief, Matt Christensen, on the enforcement and what we're doing on our platforms at the two terminals and the beefed up and having our cops be over there regularly to make sure every time the train leaves, everybody leaves, that we don't have people hanging around and things. The efforts that we're putting in are incredible, but it's not enough. And we need a broader kind of approach to this. And I hate to say it, but I think this bill is only the first step as to the work we have to do. This is a small piece of it, but I think we're going to have a lot more issues here that we're going to have to work on together, so we're glad to be making this first step.
Thank you, Mr. Killian. And we have a couple of member questions. I'm going to start with Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing this bill. And my question is for Chair Zelli. So I don't know if I missed it. I know that I wrote down that you're down 60 officers, but can you say how many officers you currently have, and kind of, yeah, I guess I'm just trying to get a sense of what the capacity is right now.
Well, we have 171 full-time positions that are kind of authorized, but we currently have about 107 current full-time officers. So we are down at least 60 that we're recruiting, and we recently raised the compensation with our police union. We believe we're in the market. I'm also pleased to say, Mr. Chair, Representative, that we look forward to introducing you to our new police chief, Director Ernest Morales, started on Monday. He has 30 years' experience in the New York Police Department and was actually a commander of the in the transit system there. He's very charismatic, very experienced, and we need a chief recruiter. We need innovative ideas, but you know, the challenge is there's as many, I think, heard recently, as many as 150 different law enforcement agencies around the entire state that are all recruiting for the same people. So we recruit between each other and among each other, and so it's, we really need to think about a career pipeline, and we've got some ideas about that, but we are done.
And another question. I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit more. You know, I heard you say that you kind of, when you're looking about the design of the stations, you're thinking about both how do you make it more defensive and more open. I guess to me those things feel a little in opposition to each other, so I'm wondering if you can explain that. And you know, I'll just say my home station is the Lake Street station, you know, which is, I think, a station that is having lots of issues right now, lots of safety concerns. And one thing that I witnessed there and I hear from constituents all the time about is just the general upkeep, right? We've had windows that have been boarded up for months, so I don't know what the delay is on just getting, you know, the windows back. The elevator is often, you know, out of commission or can't be used. I don't know if it's possible. You know, when I know on other transit systems, sometimes they just have an elevator operator, right, who can just sit in the elevator and, you know, kind of make sure that people aren't using it as a bathroom. I don't know if that's something that you all have considered. The escalator is often broken there. So I guess I'm looking for more information both about the design but also just about the maintenance and the upkeep. And is that an issue of capacity? Is that an issue of funding? What can we do to just take care of that issue? Because I do think that that definitely contributes to a general feeling of lack of care, lack of safety. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Those are really important points. When I talk about looking at the design of stations, there isn't just one design that's right, but start with clear cleaning and maintenance. We have increased the budgets. We have increased the presence, and but is not, we have not caught up. And that is a workforce issue. We are recruiting cleaners. It's not, it sounds like that's not a specialty kind of skill, but actually it is, to find those that are good at that job. We now, just the trains themselves, we generally sweep and clean the trains at the Target station. We're now beginning the cleaning at the Mall of America. So you think about the Blue Lines, especially affects the airport. We need, by the time a train goes all the way to the Target field, comes to the Mall of America and back, it can be pretty trashy. So we're actually looking at also contracting out to the extent we can't recruit our own workforce. We're looking at other contracts to, at least on an interim basis, in order to kind of meet that need. I think the care and cleanliness of the stations is the same issue. It is largely a workforce challenge. We know that some of the bus stops themselves, we've found better design when they are more glass, so open. It is less likely to have people make them into kind of mini encampments. And actually, we've had bonfires, even downtown, inside bus shelters. So the new design actually prevents that. So every station is different. In the central vertical station here in St. Paul, it's actually closed temporarily, partly because in that case it was too open, and we had actually found drug dealing going on inside the station, partly because there's a great lookout for perpetrators to be able to see customers and police. And so we have to kind of think about each design has to consider the kind of issues that are hard to consider, but they're real, and we have to face each one. But the first is actually getting the people to do the work.
Thank you, Chair Zelli. We will have one more question from Representative Petersburg. And again, as we have many testifiers, we can maybe keep the questions and responses crisp so that we can get to everybody on the list. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Crisp is the word, right? thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Zulli, this is not the first time you've been in front of this committee talking about this particular subject. And you're used to taking on the tough topics. You've admitted in your statement that this has been a priority, but it's failed. And I think everybody around this committee understands that you have your own law enforcement security system. And the wondering for me is why did this get to happen? Why was it allowed to escalate to this particular level? And what you've done up to this point, obviously, since it's not failed, it's kind of silly to keep doing it. So why are we in this particular situation when you've had opportunities to work? A while ago, you were short on funds, but you're going to be using the money gotten from the federal government through the various programs and so forth to bolster this, and yet it still hasn't materialized. And so, you know, the accountability really lies with you. The legislature now is trying to fix it for you, but this is really an issue where the Met Council has dropped the ball and allowed it to escalate, and that's just going to continue until we do something.
Chair Zulli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, we take full responsibility for the activity in the transit systems, and I think had we not taken steps starting 3 years ago, it might have actually been worse. So I think those areas, I think, have made a difference, but it's not enough. And we think we need to go beyond even the scope of the transit system. Some of the issues, fentanyl use in particular, some of the crimes, is where kind of where the downstream symptom of what's happening in society, and it comes to the platforms and to the stations. So I think the idea of taking a more systematic approach, looking even beyond the scope of transit into kind of how do we have the issues is important, but we certainly take responsibility for advancing, continue to advance solutions that we know will make a difference.
And a quick follow-up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's not necessarily him, but to you. I think we're going to have a lot more discussion about this. But since we're having this bill come back on Tuesday, would it be possible for us to hear from the new executive officer for security for Met Council? Would that be possible to bring him in on Tuesday, Mr. Chair?
I think that's a good idea. And I think it makes a lot of sense. And again, we'll have some time, but for discussion, additional discussion, as we did with the Dan Patch bill. But it would be the intention to move it out that morning. But yes, if the that's a good idea, and it sounds like potentially Chair Zulli, the
new Chair, Representative Peter,
chief,
be
could
delighted
could come
to introduce him, and he
it just seems like a good to hear
good
his
idea.
Ideas.
Good idea, and we'll make time for that. I appreciate that. Thank you very much to both of you, and. Again, members, we're going to go through our additional testimony now. We have our wonderful former colleague, Commissioner Rena Moran, is here. And we also have Jeff Lundy on deck from Hennepin County. And then we'll move on from there. Okay. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to see you again, Commissioner.
It is
welcome back to the
you.
Transportation Committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Chair Hornstein. It is really great to be back and great to see you and be in your committee. And to the committee members, good morning. My name is Rena Moran, Ramsey County Commissioner. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to offer some comments on House File 2045. Representative Tafke has reached out to us as county as a county and the county board, and we appreciate the conversation that has happened and hope to continue those in the days ahead. We support the overarching goals of the bill and amendments, and that is to protect the investment that we have made in the transit system and help the people who are riding the light rail. Transit is an asset in our region, and I know we share the goal of a successful system. But I'd like to also just share with you that this is a bigger issue. You know, until we address the homeless crisis, the mental health crisis, and the impact of COVID has had on the workforce and the shortage in families and communities across the state, we will continue to see what we're seeing. We need some help with that. This is not just a metro issue. this is definitely as a state issue. As we see, is impacting trans, is impacting tourism, even internationally. And as we heard from the Met Council, we remain concerned about the use of county-based personnel to staff the response and the funding of this work. We don't operate the system, and there are a lot of jurisdictional, legal, and staffing issues with using county personnel. We are already short-staffed at Ramsey County with social service workers, and we believe some of the community organizations contracted by the Met Council would be more effective and efficient solutions for the problems that we see. Bringing on a new staff in this area can take 4 months. And moving staff off their current assignment is a decision we take very seriously as well. I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk here today and have our concerns be a part of the record. We look forward to working on this bill in the days ahead. And again, transit is important for all of us.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, and thank you for all your great work in the community. Our next testifier is Commissioner Lundy from Hennepin County, and after Commissioner Lundy, we'll have David Peterson, who will be joining us on Zoom. Commissioner Lundy, it's great to see you again.
Yes.
Welcome to the Transportation Committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hortzini, members. My name is Jeff Lundy. I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 1. I also am chair of the Public Safety Committee for the county. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today and thank Representative Tapke for his work, among many others, to help move this issue and a resolution forward. Hennepin County plays a significant role funding the region's public transportation system, specifically the capital funding and operating costs for our light rail and bus rapid transit lines to serve Minnesotans with convenient, equitable access to jobs, schools, and their daily needs. Safety is a key component in the delivery of that quality transit system. Incidents of harassment and crime in the transit system compromises the rider's sense of safety and discourage people from using transit, which can lead to decreased ridership and even greater sense of risk. We understand the scope of the issue extends far beyond the transit system and requires holistic solutions and greater investment in economic opportunities, housing, and homelessness response. Our region needs a safer, efficient, and reliable transit system to serve riders and meet the full economic benefit and climate and congestion fighting potential of public transit. We support this bill's goal to shift the culture and improve safety on the system, and we want to make sure this is an effective solution. For this project, Hennepin County is best suited to provide technical assistance and support. We are concerned with the use of county-based social workers to serve on intervention teams because it will take them away from responding to other critical and closely connected work like encampment outreach, which could only exacerbate that problem. We simply do not have social workers sitting idle, and it would take months to hire additional personnel. I would also share with you that in the last budget cycle, last December, we entered a partnership with the city of Minneapolis to provide 6 embedded social workers. We also expanded our already robust embedded social worker program that is already throughout the suburbs by adding 6 more, which I believe brings our number to 18. As mayor of Brooklyn Park, I was the first city to have an embedded social worker in our city working with our public safety. So we know the value. It does take time, and we do have people. And just so this committee knows, we do split the costs. So the cities are paying for those social workers, and we are in the process of hiring those 12 right now. Instead, we recommend that focus on Metro Transit, contract with community-based organizations to provide these services. These organizations work across the metro and are already connected with our health and homelessness systems. This will ensure a more efficient solution to get this project up and running and expedited time frame needed. We hope and will continue to work with all and the chair on these efforts, and we look forward to working with Vice Chair Tapke to continue to move this forward. This is a good idea, and we all agree that what our end goal is a safer, more just system, and so we stand here ready to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony and your work at the county.
Thank you.
Our next testifier will be joining us by Zoom, and that is Mr. David Peterson.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, maybe just a slight bit louder on the volume, but we can certainly see you and hear you.
Okay. All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is David Peterson. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for inviting me to speak today. When I saw this bill, I immediately reached out. I live in Minneapolis and work in St. Paul at a software startup near the Raymond Station on the Green Line. As a regular transit user, the state of the light rail system to me is shocking. The drug use is out of control. There are fentanyl wrappers all over the floor of the train, and I really can't believe where it's gotten. People who depend on transit, like MPS high school students, who have no other choice, there's no school buses, people going to work, people shopping, going to events, or traveling with their families should not be exposed to this. I appreciate this bill's prompt call to action to deal with these issues. A rapid response to me is vital and why I really like this bill. These issues are not simple, not easy, and need to be approached carefully. Law enforcement is not the only answer. I think the multifaceted and nuanced approach outlined in this bill is key, and the humane interventions are exactly what we need to address the drug use and safety on the train. The transit system is so important to regional growth. I love using it. The new D line has been great. I live right by a stop, but it needs to be robust, frequent, and most of all, safe. A parent with young children should feel comfortable and even delighted to be on the train or waiting at a station. This bill, I think, will help restore the backbone of our transit system by improving the safety and quality of rider experience and deliver help for those in our community who are in need. I fully support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Our next testifier is Brooke Blakey, and then after that, Grace Bessa-Cayley. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Brooke Blakey, and I'm the current director of the Office of Neighborhood Safety for the City of St. Paul. As well as in my previous roles, I served as a captain for the Metro Transit Police Department, as well as a sergeant for their homeless action team, and well as a proud officer of the department. I'm here today in support of House File 2405. We are supportive of this bill for a variety of reasons. This would provide benefit to the riders of St. Paul by providing an innovative approach to public safety that focuses on engaging directly with our community and riders. Looking at how to address the policies, procedures, and operations in a more progressive and equitable way to answer the needs of our community better and serve all of our system riders. The addition of the proposed transit service intervention project aligns directly with the City of St. Paul's Community First Public Safety Initiative and Framework by providing consistent and equitable partnership with the planning process of the services proposed to be offered to the individuals and riders of our system. This allows direct engagement with the Metro Transit Police Department, the community-based organizations that have the ability to provide the services that the riders and the users of the system need. It will also continue to provide advocacy groups the information that they need to provide the guidance and provide structure to the essential needs of the riders of our system. And again, building a sense of trust and ownership in the system that they ride. The establishment of a transit service intervention project aligns with the Office of Neighborhood Safety Community Response Teams, which are our HART team, our COAST team, and our CARES team. Those teams address those experiencing homelessness, mental health crises, and substance use abuse, and provides wraparound services. This would allow seamless intervention across all of our systems within the City of St. Paul, as well as our partners in Bloomington, the City of Minneapolis, and our surrounding suburbs. The establishment of the transit intervention project will reduce fare evasions, increase revenue, and create a more positive environment for our operators as well as our riders. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and provide support to this very important bill.
And thank you, and thank you for all of your work in the community as well. Grace Bessa-Cayley. Welcome to the committee, and it's great to see you again.
Yes, hello. My name is Grace Bessa-Cayley. As a community organizer and a student, I engage in numerous fruitful conversations on transit. The underlying issue is that we, the state of Minnesota, does not have a social safety net that sufficiently meets the needs of unhoused transit riders, like other testifiers have mentioned. What would that look like if we strive to support marginalized individuals? My vision, as well as many other community members, is to have a fully staffed transit ambassador program. The ambassador will treat everyone with compassion and care, emphasis on compassion and care, as well as be equipped to support those struggling in and about transit. Furthermore, ambassadors will be trained to de-escalate conflict. This vision can only be accomplished with ample funding allocated to the transit system. We are at a pivotal moment where so much progress can be done to invest in transit that will mend and nourish the system. The only place I have called home is Minnesota, precisely Brooklyn Park. As a 21-year-old organizer, I am urging appropriate solutions on issues ranging from climate and housing justice to transit equity with the end goal of obtaining a just future for all. I want to call Minneapolis my home after I complete my undergraduate degree. But I hope to settle in a city, a metropolitan area, and a state that establishes a sturdy transit system for all generations to appreciate and that tackles the issue of safety in a manner that does not criminalize or dehumanize folks in dire situations. I am pleased to see that with the budget surplus, our legislators are acting at a rapid pace to advocate for a better transit system. However, I would like to emphasize that criminal penalties are not the solution to transit issues, and that behavioral issues on transit are a reflection of our unsupported social systems. And also, P.S., I would love to become a transit ambassador.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Amethyst O'Connell, followed by Sean Lim. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Amethyst O'Connell. I'm from Roseville, and I'm a UMN student. Two fun facts. I'm sadly in the eighth year of my bachelor's, and despite this, I'm debt-free. One of the reasons I'm debt-free is because I don't own a car. According to the AAA, the cost of owning a new vehicle in Minnesota yearly is $10,000. UMN in-state is $15,000. When you become a transit rider, you become acquainted with people's struggles. People have been failed by us and have nowhere to go. You get on the Green Line early, you're guaranteed to see someone sleeping across the seats. You get on the train when it's cold, it'll be filled with people taking refuge with no specific destination in mind. People age out of foster care or too gay for their parents when people are breaking up with tyrants, going through ugly divorces, battling with mental health. People get on the train to flee as far as the train will take them. Last, the train is only a metaphor for escape. Waiting at the end of the line is Target Field. I do love the twins, but Correa is a shortstop, not a social worker. Happenings on the train don't faze me, but they make the train intimidating to people who just want to ride and make it hard to introduce riding to others, like my grandma, who lives in Travis County and avoids visiting because she hates driving here. It'd be fine if we didn't need more people to ride the train, but we're in a climate crisis, and even if you don't believe that, people on the coast do, and they read lists of places that are least affected and see frigid Minneapolis topping that list. Little problem with that, though. We have left exits because our highways are squished. If we grow as a city, there's nowhere for roads. I believe in MnDOT, but not in them paving over the Mississippi. We need a fully funded transit system that's welcoming and that everyone wants to use if we don't want runaway housing and West Coast traffic. I support HF 2045, especially the Transit Service Intervention Program, because the most vulnerable should not be sacrificed when we're building the transit system of the future, but we do need a safe transit system, and that starts with getting people the help they need. I also support decriminalization because eating a Juicy Lucy on a train is gross, but shouldn't be a crime. And as we add more people to our transit system who don't know that, we'll have feedback loops where every time we improve our transit system, we'll get an increase in crime from all the newbies treating it like their car, which when people like my parents see an increase in crime, they don't want to ride the train. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Sean Lim and then Jenny Wang. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. Thanks for having me. My name is Sean Lim. My pronouns are he, him, and I am the program director at the Minnesota Youth Collective. I ride the Green Line on a daily basis to get to work, run errands, visit friends, and get back home. Increased policing and leveling of harsher punishment on Minnesotans is never, should never, and can never be the solution. Currently, under Minnesota state statute, a misdemeanor crime carries a sentence of up to 90 days in jail, a fine of up to $1,000, or both. Littering and discarding wrappers should not be a misdemeanor punishable by 90 days in jail, a $1,000 fine, or both. Smoking a cigarette should not be a misdemeanor punishable by 90 days in jail, a $1,000 fine, or both. Time and time again, I have personally witnessed how Metro Transit Police disproportionately mistreat Black, Brown, Indigenous riders and harass our unhoused neighbors simply seeking warmth and shelter during the wintertime. And as amended, this bill only expands justifications, codifies, and finances the ability for Metro Transit Police to enforce these criminal penalties, which will disproportionately affect vulnerable riders. You know, a lot of testifiers have said time and time again, transit is a fallback for society's most marginalized people, and that is why we need transit equity, and that is why we need a fully funded, holistic transit ambassador program that actually provides social services instead of more cops, peace police, or fair enforcers. Transit ambassadors should be equipped and supported in reducing harm on our transit system and actually connect riders to tangible resources that will uplift their standard of living. These issues on transit and on our trains are an extrapolation of issues that we have in our society. The human cost of insufficient housing and healthcare make public transit one of the few places and spaces accessible to unhoused people. So, as such, this $1 million could be better used to fund initiatives that actually mitigate all of these systemic issues that we have. And that is perhaps the better use of our $17 billion surplus in the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next we have Jenny Wang. Wong, sorry. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Jenny Huang. Thanks for having me, by the way. I'm a math teacher. I live in St. Paul, but I teach in Edina. And for the past month, I have been completely reliant on public transit because my 23-year-old beater car finally broke down last month. And at this point, I can't afford to buy a new one because, well, I'm a teacher. So I was forced to adapt. I had taken the bus during college to get to and from campus, so I figured I could refamiliarize myself with the transit system. And I found a route to work which involves a light rail and two buses. The trip is over 2 hours one way, which is less than ideal, but I have kids to teach and no other choice. Taking the route to school by transit alone sometimes felt like embarking on the Odyssey. There was no shortage of obstacles, like slow bus times and missing transfers because of delays, freezing temperatures with unheated stations, but logistical inconveniences aside, there have been moments on the bus where I have feared for my safety. I've been verbally harassed. I have witnessed physical altercations, but despite what I've experienced, I still believe in the expansion and betterment of public transit in Minnesota, and I still advocate for more public transit, more reliable transit, more accessible transit, and most of all, safer transit. I know everyone, the people before me have said that the safety issues here are a societal and systemic issue. But I support this bill as a first step and a stepping stone to greater legislation to make transportation better and safer for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have Abdi Nasir Nurkadi. And then we'll have Ryan Timlin after that.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi there. I'm Abdi Nasir Nurkadi. You can just call me Nas. I am with Move Minnesota. Thank you for letting me come testify. I am totally car-free at the moment, and I use transit for every facet of my life. Family, work, obligations, friends, it's all transit. And some days, if everything goes wrong, it'll take me 3 hours to get to work. If you're hard-headed and you're physically able enough, even that itself can actually be a privilege. Because I don't fear for my safety when I ride transit. And I don't fear for my body either. I can reasonably endure the cold. Strangers don't bother me. But there's a reason that even though I take transit several times a day, I'll still pay for my mother's Ubers. I don't want to risk anything. a big part of the work we do at Move Minnesota's story collection. Usually, I get people to tell me their stories on the train or the bus, but sometimes they'll reach out to us because they want to be heard that badly. And I can help people with most of the things that they bring up. Time management, basic route knowledge, logistics, etc. But I do not know what to say to people that feel unsafe. The women, those with disabilities, the elderly, when they tell me about their fear, what can I say? Nothing. And I hate how stupid I look when I say nothing when they tell me about what they fear most. This bill, it's a good start. Transit needs to be safer. And we can do that by getting more people on transit. And with that, we can begin to build a community that feels safe. Whether it's transit ambassadors or stronger funding, we'll make it better, faster. You've heard from the people before me that regardless of their experiences, they still wish for better transit. And I don't think that there are any sunk costs when it comes to helping keep people safe. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We have one final testifier, Ryan Timlin from the ATU. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Ryan Timlin. I am president of Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005. We represent the 2,000 transit workers that maintain and operate the Metro Transit system, along with 80 operators down in the Rochester city, along with 30 maintenance employees who maintain the U of M systems and some of the other systems out there as well. I'm here to speak about the issues that have developed as I don't have to add to the stories you have all told, but it is good to hear the side of the workforce that is out there that maintains and cleans and operates the system. Several have mentioned, you know, Lake Street Station, Franklin Avenue. It is our members who do maintain those stations and that workforce. They're called PFWs, Public Facilities Workers. We have several public facility workers. Yeah, they can tell you stories about needles. If you go to the Lake Street Station, you can look down the elevator shaft and see it's full of needles. This is a massive, you know, problem, and I will agree. It is the social safety net that has deteriorated over several decades that has led to this. It's a greater problem than the system. Of Metro Transit system, and I'm really glad we're talking about social workers getting out there to assist. Our workforce needs that assistance. Currently, we have one PFW who, to be honest, is on admin leave right now. They defended themselves. It reached the point to where if they hadn't defended themselves, I think we may be talking about a death today of one of our members. We have bus operators who are suffering from PTSD and are not getting the assistance they need to get through the PTSD, to get back to work. They're continually pressured to come back to work. This creates an immense strain on the workforce to maintain these workers to keep coming back and do this. There are not enough PFWs out there to keep the system clean. They go through. They do what they can at Lake Street. They go through. They do what they can at Franklin Avenue. And once they're done, they can see it already being messed up again. They're doing what they can. They're overstretched. And I really want to stress that. The amount of pressure they feel is immense. This is a great first step, but it must expand. I agree with all those who have stepped before us. It must expand. We need to look at other ideas as well. I have thoughts. I would love to talk to many politicians about thoughts to get riders back. More visibility, more riders will help reduce this. But to give another example, one situation I can give another story about is up in North Minneapolis at Lindale and Broadway. For quite a while, we were reaching out to Metro Transit to address a major drug issue that was at this bus stop. It became a drug haven for use and dealing. And we tried to get it addressed so either it could get moved away from where it was at because it was right next to Merwin Liquors, we were falling on deaf ears. The responses we would get were about equity. We're talking about a neighborhood that is, I'll be honest, most people in that neighborhood do not look like me. But when you're talking about equity, what about the equity of everybody in that neighborhood who is handicapped, uses that bus stop, or those who have to walk multiple blocks further to avoid an unsafe situation? To use equity and spin it on its head, we need to rethink how we use some of our terms and really engage these communities. I'll pretty much leave it at that. I just really wanted to urge and let people know what is going on. We do need to fully fund the system. We are seeing environmental crises. Transit is one of the major ways forward to reduce the mitigations that are out there for the environment. But we need a safe, reliable system for our workers and our riders.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, here's how I'd like to proceed, because we have another important bill coming up. We are going to have one amendment offered by Representative Petersburg. I understand there's at least one more person that wants to testify. We don't have time today. We could have very limited time for some additional testimony next week. But for today, we'll have we'll have more discussion on the bill next on Tuesday. But for now, I would like to offer the opportunity for Representative Petersburg to offer his amendment, and then in the next couple of minutes, we'll move on to our next bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, this, if we still have the amendment on the floor, my amendment would simply strike.
And what is the coding for your?
It is A2.
We have an A2 amendment, being moved. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. The A2 amendment is moved for discussion.
Yes, and I would like to move that amendment. And basically what it does is the original amendment strikes as one of the prohibited activities operating a radio, an electronic device, without using earphones and whatever. This amendment actually just puts that back into place as one of the violations of prohibited activities.
Okay. Thank you for the amendment. I would just ask for advice from the author on this amendment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg for bringing this forward. At this time, I'm going to ask folks to not adopt this amendment. We have we've been going through an extensive process with the Code of Conduct and are working on improving it, so we'll have other stops where we'll be able to do that as well. But this is an issue that we're trying to do with the Code of Conduct is to put things in buckets of this is a dangerous activity and this is an irritating or annoying activity kind of thing, and make sure that we have different responses for those. And I am not sure I need to talk to folks about exactly how this will fit in the future, but we can absolutely work on it as it goes forward.
Discussion. Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that. I just do think that the annoyance is just as an issue as of dangerous things for people not wanting to ride it. And so it's of concern, and Representative Tapke, I know we've talked about this before. We'll have further discussions. I just think it's worthy for us at least have it on the books that some of us think annoyance of sound is also important. So thank you.
We'll have Representative Brand, Representative Sensenmura, and then we'll vote on the amendment. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To this amendment, you know, I too have been a little bit conflicted about whether or not we allow this or not. But when I think about my experiences on light rail in the last, during this session, that one first week here when I was on light rail and when I decided I was not riding light rail anymore until things got much different, I think of noisy music as maybe like one of those things where we need to have folks that are de-escalating the situation. It's kind of telling people, hey, knock it off, that sort of thing. But I mean, first of all, if we're going to give somebody a fine over this, a lot of those folks probably aren't going to be able to show up to court, probably not going to be able to pay for it. We're jamming up our court system. To me, this doesn't seem like the best use of everybody's time. And secondly, you know, we've got rampant drug use on trains and buses, or especially the trains. I for one, saw it. And that's one of the reasons why I decided not to ride light rail anymore. I think we have to address those issues because my kids aren't my family. We're not riding light rail. I have that opportunity. I have that privilege not to do it until things like that are addressed. Music is so far down on my list.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmira.
Yeah, I think I will just offer a different perspective. You know, I think we're talking a lot about, like, you know, we're trying to build a culture of public transit ridership, you know, and I think about in the U.S., like, the city that is most known for a culture of public, you know, transit and ridership is New York City. And if anyone has ever been taken, you know, the subway in New York, you hear music all the time, right? You hear music in the station. Oftentimes people will come onto a train and they will play music and they will dance. And I don't pretend to say that everyone on the train likes that, but it's an accepted and really often vibrant part of that culture. And I've seen kids on a New York subway that love to watch people dance, love to watch people play music on it. So I actually, you know, think that we need to be a little bit, I don't know, I want us to think a little bit more complex, add more complexity to the discussion about what it would mean to really create a culture of ridership. And I think music could actually be a part of that.
Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Very quick. As the author of the amendment, yeah. You get the last word.
Thank you. I would just say we have families with young kids, and some of the rap music and other stuff can be just as vile as some of the videos that we see, too. And I just think that's important for us to consider as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have the A2 amendment before us. The author is recommending a no vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed?
No. No.
The motion does not prevail. Okay. Very quickly, this bill is being laid over, and we'll hear from hopefully the, as amended, and hopefully the chief will be with us, and we'll have some very limited additional testimony, and then we'll vote the bill out. And thank you very much. Do you have any quick final comments based on what you've heard?
Yeah, Mr. Shea, thank you so much, everyone. Thanks, everybody, for being here. It's great to have all the testimony. And just to share and frame what we have going on with safety and comfort on our transit system. And as you can see, this is an interjurisdictional issue. There are a lot of different pieces at play here. And where we've been so far is a lot of and why I believe we haven't had action being taken on this is there's a lot of this is someone else's issue, and this is somebody else's issue, and this is somebody else's issue, and it hasn't been a holistic, coordinated approach. And so that's what the goal of this bill is, to have a project manager that will have a coordinated approach in order to make sure that we are actually taking action on these topics to get people back on the train so that we can have a safer, more comfortable ride. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, House File 2045 as amended is laid over. Okay, members, one more bill on our agenda for today. And we have Representative Kraft with House File 1275. And I will move that House File 1275 be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Kraft, welcome. And
thank you.
Please let us know about House File 1275. I know you have an author's amendment labeled A2, so why don't we start with that?
Sure. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. So the A2 amendment is actually a result of significant amount of stakeholder engagement with stakeholders as well as with the agency involved, and it's the way I would like the bill to be heard.
Hey, A2 is moved and before us. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All of those opposed, the motion prevails. And now we have House File 1275 as amended before us. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm happy to be bringing House File 1275 on pipeline safety before you today. In order to prevent damage and ensure safety, Minnesota requires excavators to provide notice before digging and for utility operators to mark the location of underground utilities. Many people know this program as 811, call before you dig, or Gopher State One Call. I will say that this is some of the things that I have learned over the past few weeks in working on this bill. This system is overseen by the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety, or MNOPS, within DPS, and seeks to ensure projects that require digging do not damage underground facilities, such as gas lines or utilities. This bill focuses on two things: updating civil penalties to match federal requirements, and improving the data and visibility to performance on locate requests. First, MnOps has been informed that civil penalties need to be increased to match federal guidelines. Otherwise, they could lose the ability to undertake enforcement actions. This is in sections 2 and 3 of the bill, and there is nothing in the amendment that proposes changes to that language. Second, the dig notification and location marking process is section 1 of the bill, and this is what all of the changes in the amendments in the amendment is about. Pipeline operators have been required to provide this information, and it has generally been voluntary for utilities. My understanding is that the voluntary hasn't provided necessary data to improve the overall process and ensure safety, and this bill would make it mandatory for utilities to provide the data. As I mentioned, we've had pretty extensive stakeholder engagement since this bill was dropped, and the A2 amendment represents a lot of that feedback and give and take on both sides, and represents what I think is a reasonable approach. But with that, I'd like to turn over to the testifier here from MnOps.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Hornstein, Chair Hornstein, and committee members. My name is John Wolfgram. I'm the Deputy Director of the Office of Pipeline Safety. I'd like to thank Representative Kraft for the time he spent working on this bill, as well as the time of the committee today to hear this. As Representative Kraft did a very good job of giving an overview, this involves the Office of Pipeline Safety's oversight both of our One Call Law, or our Call Before You Dig Law in our state, as well as our pipeline safety laws. Both of these regulatory frameworks are ensure the safety of Minnesotans, whether it's the reliability and safety of our pipeline infrastructure or ensuring that people are safe when any time there's an excavation or any digging that might happen around an underground line. I'll walk through the couple sections of the A2 amendment. The first part of this starts out with building a reporting requirement. The reporting requirement would pertain to utility companies, where they would have to report to the Office of Pipeline Safety on a quarterly basis three items. The first being the number of locate requests that they respond to. These locate requests would be any time a homeowner, member of the public, or a excavation contractor would call Gopher State One Call using that 811 number or going online to request that their job site be marked. After this prompting, the utility companies would go out to the job site and mark the location of underground gas lines, electric lines, telecommunication lines, and any other utilities in the area. The second element for reporting would be the number of times that the utilities were damaged by each utility type. So if there was an excavation-related damage to a gas line, a telecom line, sewer, or water line, that would be reported to the Office of Pipeline Safety, including how that utility was damaged, whether it was due to excavation practices or locating practices. Additionally, we're requesting an on-time performance metric to be reported. Basically, that would be the ability of the utility to respond to that locate request on time. Again, each of these items would be reported to the Office of Pipeline Safety electronically each quarter. MnOps began working with stakeholders back in 2019 through a series of meetings to develop and work through many nuances of our statutes. We heard many ideas, we heard a number of concerns, and lots of concepts that were discussed during that time. We utilize that feedback to present to what we have today with the reporting requirement. As we've heard the concerns and worked through the various meetings and such with stakeholders, is the Office of Pipeline Safety's belief that we really do need more data to address the adequacy of our statutes when there's concerns. Being able to have data would allow us to look at the capabilities of our system and drive any future changes that we might have to our statutes. This data would allow the Office of Pipeline Safety, as well as the industry, to understand how many damages are occurring to our underground utilities each year, and why are these damages occurring. These damages can lead to critical infrastructure outages, property damage, injuries, fatalities, as well as an environmental impact. In addition to damages, industry stakeholders have expressed concerns about the number of utility requests or locate requests that happen in peak digging months. There's concerns with the ability of companies to respond to these tickets on time. Having more data would allow us to address these concerns, to be able to see what are the concerns or how would we future, or how we, if we look to the future, how would we make potential changes. The second section of the bill involves the Office of Pipeline Safety's pipeline safety civil penalties. These are penalties that are issued in follow-up to violations of our pipeline safety regulations, Minnesota Statute 299F and 299J. The proposal essentially looks to adopt the federal civil penalty provisions in 49 CFR Part 190. These are the Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration, or PHMSA's penalty structure. The Office of Pipeline Safety participates in annual audits from PHMSA each year that are associated with our grant funding that we use for our program. Since 2019, the Office of Pipeline Safety has been cited for a failure to adopt these federal amounts as our state amounts. And with that, we've been issued statements that we may lose funding for our pipeline safety programs, or most recently, we would lose the ability to enforce our pipeline safety regulations in follow-up to underground natural gas storage violations. The committee will also note that in the A2 amendment, there's a number of committee stakeholder types of revisions or amendments that have been issued. The first element would be to prohibit the Office of Pipeline Safety from utilizing the reporting that we talked about earlier to carry out enforcement actions. You'll also note a number of items that have been included to work to give the utility operators as well as the excavation contractors more flexibility in coordinating locate marks on their job sites. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee
might
have.
Thank you. What I'd like to do, members, is we have four additional testifiers. I want to make sure that we have enough time for an amendment and discussion. We can go, if necessary, to 5 after 10. So with that, let's get the public testimony in. And I'd ask, again, testifiers to be as economical with your time as possible. Keep it to a couple of minutes. First, we have Tony Mendoza, followed by Tom Hansen. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Horstein. My name is Tony Mendoza. I'm outside general counsel to the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. And thank you for the opportunity to testify about House File 1275. On behalf of MCCA, I've been working on issues related to Gopher State One Call for nearly 15 years. I'd also like to thank Representative Kraft and the office for engaging MCCA and other stakeholders over the past week regarding our concerns with the bill. There are two amendments in your packet today, and both would improve the bill and the overall performance and efficiency of the Gopher State One Call system. The A1 amendment, however, would address one of the underlying fundamental problems afflicting the Gopher State One Call system that the author's amendment does not at this time. OPS has, during a recent period of high demand on the GSOC system, issued notices of probable violation to a wide swath of operators who must respond to an increasingly high volume of locate requests within a very short period of time. The statute only allows owners of underground facilities 48 hours to mark those facilities after a locate request has been called in. If that locate request is not marked within 48 hours, the underground facility owner is technically in violation of the statute. Hidden within the high volume of locate requests are requests that are not made in good faith. Locate requests are regularly submitted in cases where there is no intent to excavate, for areas where the excavation work has already been done, and in areas so large that it would not be possible to excavate the area within the 14-day time window in which a locate ticket is valid. For example, one of our members told me that a ticket was called in for an area 5 miles long. It would be impossible to complete a 5-mile excavation project in 14 days. Yet, all of the underground facility operators were forced to go out and locate all 5 miles of this area within 48 hours. If any locate was not completed within 48 hours, it would have constituted technically a violation of the law and be subject to fines. This is a tremendous waste of resources and unfair. Because the GSOC system is inundated with these kinds of bad faith locate requests, assessing fines is not going to make the GSOC system work any better. And in fact, MnOps's decision to issue violation notices and assess fines has made the problem worse by tying up resources responding to these kinds of violation notices. OPS is not going to be able to find its way out of this problem. House File 1275 would require owners of underground facilities to report quarterly the number of locate requests, the percentage of locate requests marked by the start date on the notice. But without addressing the underlying issue of bad faith reporting, the reports that would be required under the bill will suffer from a garbage in, garbage out problem. The data in these reports won't be reliable either as the basis for making operational improvements to the system or as the basis of enforcement actions.
Mr. Hansen, I want to make sure the other industry Mr. Mendoza, I want to make sure the other industry folks have an opportunity to testify. If you could wrap up, that would be great.
Sure. So our A2 amendment would essentially require excavators to use the system in good faith, and it would require MinOps to investigate, locate requests to make sure that they are made in good faith before they issue a notice of probable violation. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1275. We look forward to continuing to work with Representative Kraft, OPS, and all the stakeholders on this bill to make the system work better and safer for everyone. Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. We will be considering the amendment. Now we have Mr. Hansen. Welcome. Good to see you again. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Hansen, and I'm with the law firm Winthrop & Weinstein, and we have the pleasure of representing the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. For those that don't know, the MTA is a trade association comprised of more than 70 telecommunications companies across Minnesota. These companies range from family-owned companies and local cooperatives with storefronts on Main Street, Minnesota, to companies with multi-state operations. MTA's members provide voice, video, and high-speed internet throughout Minnesota. We also want to thank Representative Kraft for his willingness to work with us on his amendment and for his desire to address some of our concerns that we have raised. He's been very thoughtful and has really worked hard with us, so thank you. But we still think the bill needs to work for everyone. Under current law, there is a carefully created balance between excavators and network operators, and we believe this bill, as amended, still tips the balance in favor of the excavators. In particular, the 48-hour locate rule is one of the shortest time frames in the country. As more and more broadband is deployed, it will be harder and harder to meet the deadline. MTA has participated in stakeholder meetings in the past and commits to continue those efforts in the future to work towards consensus in the right-of-way space. Thank you for listening to my testimony.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Sarah Sick on behalf of the Associated General Contractors, and then we'll have Ben Wallace after Sarah. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Pasek, and I'm representing the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. You typically see Laura Ziegler sitting here at the table representing AGC, but I'm working with AGC specifically on the utility locating and worker safety issues. We want to thank Representative Kraft for the conversations, not only on this bill, but more broadly on the importance of worker safety and utility damage prevention. We also want to thank the Office of Pipeline Safety and the Department of Public Safety for their efforts to collect data that will provide key insights about excavation damages to underground lines. AGC supports House File 1275 as introduced, as well as most sections of the adopted A2 author's amendment. However, we do oppose the provision on line 1.9 of the A2 amendment, which essentially extends the 48-hour notice requirement to 72 hours for a utility to respond to a locating request. We believe this change should be considered in a broader context and jointly with language that bolsters the accuracy of underground utility locates by facility owners. More time for inaccurate markings does not move us forward in improving safety for our workers and delivering projects more efficiently. This will cause further delays in construction timelines, and we oppose this change. One of AGC's goals is to prioritize worker safety, safety of the general public, and utility infrastructure damage prevention. A recent national survey conducted by the Associated General Contractors of America found significant flaws in the current 811 utility system. Nationally, most contractors said that calling 811 often leads to inaccurate line marking and that utility firms are often slow in coming out to locate and mark underground lines. our contractors in Minnesota report the same frustrations. So most of House File 1275 is a good first step in addressing this problem, and AGC of Minnesota is committed to the goal of ensuring worker safety and underground utility damage prevention. So I just want to thank you again for hearing our concerns today. We look forward to working with Representative Kraft and the committee on future legislation that can take a more robust look at the laws regarding Minnesota's underground utility excavation notice system. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And our final testifier is Ben Wallace, and then we'll get we'll move quickly into Representative Hutella's amendment. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. My name is Ben Wallace. I want to thank the committee for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you this morning about efforts to improve State Law 216D. I'm a regional director for USIC Locating Services, and I have responsibility for several states, including Minnesota. I've been in the industry for over 26 years, and I currently serve on the board of directors for Gopher State One Call, providing perspective from the locate industry. As a member of the board, I strive to try to see the perspective from all stakeholders regarding damage prevention and public safety. My company and I have welcomed the opportunity to work with utility and excavation communities to help amend the law in a way that will benefit all stakeholders. We appreciate the efforts to improve the 48-hour window and the requiring white lining on locates. With that said, there are still other concerns with 216D that we feel need to be addressed that will affect the safety of excavators, locators, and the communities where excavation is occurring. So in that regard, we do not support the bill as it's currently configured. Many professional excavators plan and submit their work appropriately, but there are significant issues where excavators call and locate tickets without good faith intent to dig, and that creates situations where locate capacity is wasted on work where excavation is not going to occur. This also pulls our locators away from areas where excavating is occurring and creates the opportunity for missed locates and public safety concerns. I have a few examples I'll run through quickly to kind of explain what I'm talking about. For instance, last week we received about 2 feet of snow, freezing rain. You know, the mail wasn't delivered for a couple of days, garbage was delayed, schools were closed for 2 days, yet over those 2 days we received almost 1,000 Gopher State One Call tickets where excavators were not going to be out doing any work, yet within the statute we had 48 hours to complete those locates, putting our technicians in a very unsafe position. We had a long scope ticket where an excavator submitted 34 tickets covering 150 miles of roadway, asking for both sides of the road to be marked. When we talked to them, they had no intent to dig that entire area. They wanted a few spots along the way, but they wanted it marked just in case. And lastly, we have work where tickets are being called in on jobs that have already been completed. We had a situation where over a 12-month period, a ticket was called in 201 times for a busy roadway in Minneapolis. When our technician tried to locate that job, he was struck by a vehicle, and it also caused a three-car crash. After we did our investigation on that job, we found out that the work had already been completed. There were no marks needed, but the ticket continued to be updated so that they could go out and work in case they needed to.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and we want to get to an amendment here from Representative Hutella.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment is moved and before us, Representative Hutella.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tabke, and all of the testimony that we heard, I think brought up some very valid points. So this is an incredibly complex issue, right? You have this pretty unrealistic time frame sometimes for our locators to go out and find these lines. And well, as we heard in testimony, 90%+ of our contractors are great, have great intent. They want to get their jobs done, and there's a percentage of them that are putting our locators in a very bad position. And I think it's very unfair of the Office of Pipeline Safety to try and bring all the fines and all the liability right back to our utility holders that are in the ground. So I think what my amendment does is help keep that 10% or less percentage of contractors honest. There's a reason for all these statutory requirements, right, that you have 2 weeks to dig afterwards. We have rain, we have wind and sandy areas and other things like that. And to go out and put a ticket in and require our locators to find it within 48 hours for a contractor that has no intent to dig for 30 days. He just wants to make sure, or she wants to make sure, that their job is ready when that excavator arrives. I think it's unfair to say, well, we're going to increase fines and place this solely back on the shoulders of the utilities. So my amendment would hopefully make it a little bit better for those utility companies and find a little more balance between our excavators and our locators.
Thank you for bringing the amendment, and maybe we'll have a quick response from the author and the Department of Public Safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hudella. I will point out that I appreciate being called Representative Tabke. I can be as good-looking as my colleague.
I didn't have my glasses on. My bad.
No, I like trading up. Appreciate that.
How did I think of it?
Look, I really appreciate the spirit of this amendment. I will say, you know, I got into this over the past couple of weeks, and it has unlocked a whole bunch of new learning for me in this area. What I think we have here with the A2, and why I'm going to ask for a no on the A1, is a reasonable compromise. And one of the ways I would point out is I had people on both sides speaking somewhat, you know, against this. So I think we've kind of got something in the middle. We have done things in the A2 amendment to relax the 48-hour requirement. I think the agency can speak a little bit about their approach to fines. That's not being done to raise fines. It's to be in conjunction with the federal guidelines. And on some of these areas, when you start putting in on the excavate locate issues, I agree it's an issue and it needs to be dealt with. But I'm really concerned about rushing in and changing some stuff. I'm not sure this is quite the right space to legislate. I'm convinced that MnOps have been told that they're going to have a good faith approach to this, and I'd like them to try this with better data, and then let's look at it in a year and see with that data where it's going. I'm going to ask for a no vote on the A1.
Okay, thank you. If there's any quick additional discussion or response from Representative Dalla.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft. I get it, and I think encouraged to see conversations from both sides, and I know that OPS has been in great discussions with the stakeholders in this, and would encourage continued compromise on both sides before this becomes law. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw the amendment.
Okay, the A1 is withdrawn. Members, before we proceed to a vote, if anyone has any other comments, or the author, very quickly, Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation. I'm a contractor, and we do a lot of locates before we dig. And I just have to say, the time in which we submit the ticket and the time in which we can legally be at that site is so inconsistent from 48 hours. I have a case in point here where I requested one on 531, and I wasn't legally able to be there until 6-8. I had another instance in which it was 10-8, and I wasn't allowed to be there legally until 10-18 of that year, October 18th. And so the 48 hours, I would appreciate if we could get to the 48 hours because, you know, when we've got a plan, we call in enough advance, or actually we file a ticket online in enough advance, but sometimes we have to actually apologize on behalf of other people for not actually being allowed to be on the site until the job that we request is completed for our safety. So just a comment and a big concern I have as a contractor.
Thank you so much. Further discussion, quick closing comments before we vote.
Yeah, Representative Brand, thank you for that comment. Look, this is a far more complex area than I knew, and I think requires some more work over time. But I think this is a good first step to getting better data and then having a process to work through some of these other issues that have been raised, which are real legitimate issues. So I ask for your support.
Thank you, Will. I renew the motion that House File 1275 is amended. Be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All of those opposed. The motion prevails. Thank you very much. Members, just before we adjourn, a reminder that we'll be meeting in the basement of the State Office Building tomorrow at 8:30. The only item on the agenda is Representative Cagle's bill related to the Northern Lights Express passenger rail train from the Twin Cities to Duluth. We'll spend the entire time with that and related amendments. So with that, we are adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning.